And good morning. Here we are again. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. It's the third Wednesday of the month edition with the Portland crew. I've got Sarah and Jonathan here in the studio with me. We're going to be talking about Wapato. Take it away, Sarah.
Oh, hey, what's up, everybody? John and I are here with Paul, and we are joined by Andrew Wilkins, editor of the Portland Village.
Village Portland.
Which is an independent news site. He was able to join the recent tour of the Wapato facility. So let's do a little background on Wapato. Wapato was a prison facility built by Multnomah County in what year do you know?
I think it was 2004.
2004, 2006. Yeah, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Never used as a prison, has been a big sort of money loss for the county. Jordan Schnitzer bought it at a great discount.
Who's Jordan Schnitzer?
Oh, well, Jordan Schnitzer is the heir of Schnitzer Steel, which is a longtime, great, big Portland-based steel company. They got lots of money. And Jordan Schnitzer is a developer.
Now,
yeah. And so he bought that property and has been unsuccessfully trying to turn it into something, whether that something be a prison or a treatment facility or a place to put homeless people. He doesn't really seem to care.
And just a comment on the cost, because I believe he bought it to the tune of $6 million when it was built as a $60 million facility. Is that right? So you get a 10-to-1 discount there for this rich developer guy.
Right.
And it was built off of data that they were using from scare tactics in the war on drugs 80s, where it's like, you really need to take out this loan for a prison. So We really got shafted there, is what it seems like.
Well, and now, because it's the same sort of situation all over the country, where people are deinvesting in prisons. Sometimes the government is disinvesting in prisons because of backlash, and they're putting their money into different forms of societal control. So that's why you get more people with monitors, ankle monitors, and visits from their parole officers, and less people in prisons because it's cheaper to maintain.
And they also just sell them off to private interests now.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a sort of a pushback against over-incarceration in the United States, and the response of the prison system has been to try to figure out other ways to justify imprisoning people. So we see this happening with Border Patrol and the incarceration of migrants to this country. We see this happening with the increasing criminalization of houselessness and survival behaviors associated with houselessness. So, in Portland in 2017, 52% of police arrests were of unhoused people.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't help but notice that correlation with the push for using a prison facility as a shelter. So we've been really wary of this as we've watched it develop. And we've actually been watching it for a while, and Andrew has been kind of watching this as well. So maybe you and...
Oh, yeah, we go back a little bit. You got to kind of see the seeds as well and the kind of... the kind of freakish development of that weird conservative undercurrent in our neighborhood. So just a little background, I had been on the neighborhood association for about a year and a half, 2 years almost, and Andrew was also in Montevilla filming and documenting and kind of, was that really the start of Village Portland?
I'd done like one-off stories before, but when I decided to like really pick a neighborhood and go deep,
okay,
was when all that kind of popped up.
Yeah, and maybe...
This is a couple years ago we're talking about.
This is a couple years ago now, yeah, but it was when... It was the same era where Joey Gibson was going to come to our election, and it was a little... It was pretty haywire that whole year, so...
Right. It started with the homeless resolution. I think that's kind of what kicked it off.
I would agree, yeah.
And then you guys decided
to... sweeps.
Yes.
And then you guys decided to put a crew together and take some seats.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the interesting things about neighbor associations, when people, the neighbors decide to get organized and take a couple seats, they can do it.
Yeah, and, which is what they encourage. Like Southeast Uplift was, I was always in those meetings, it was good. The only people who didn't really like it were these conservative neighbors,
right.
It seemed like.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, and it felt like the overwhelming feeling in Montevilla was that they didn't want houseless sweeps. They recognized the disruption they caused and that they wanted to work with, like, you know, they have great groups in that neighborhood who are doing great outreach.
And they
wanted to, you know, be able to work with them.
Rehab Sisters.
Yeah.
Actually, in fact, that's kind of what was the predicate, right? Because the previous neighborhood association chair, he had been doing that work for... a while in the neighborhood, and it started that emergency warming shelter that's still going, actually.
Muse
is still going. Montevilla Emergency Warming Shelter, donate if you want. So there was already kind of that established feel there for sure, but that definitely broke it. That story was a big deal, and everybody was like, oh, neighborhood associations don't support the police. I was like, well, let's talk about that.
And it was unbinding, so it wasn't like the police had to do what they said. It was like, let's look at other options. Let's figure out better ways to do it. And you talk about the village model a lot. I think that's where it's got to go.
True, yeah. And you've been doing a lot of coverage with Corey now, who's the other reporter for Village Portland, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Corey is currently houseless, I believe.
No.
No? Transition. Nope. Formerly houseless, though.
Yeah, he's had his time, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We talked a little bit about it and been covering a lot of those issues, as well as more in-depth stuff with the city and some of the things that we've been working on with Right to Survive and those groups. So how's that felt as far as, like, bridging the gap as a local independent media producer?
Well, I kind of found Corey through a friend of mine who taught at PSU.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I want to do is, like, and I've done this a lot, is kind of train activists to kind of, like, bridge the gap between journalism and activism,
mm-hmm.
and tell your stories and get organized. And Corey, basically his experiences with houselessness and poverty, so I've just been letting him run, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, he's kicking me stories, and I'm like, let's do this. It's all important stuff. It's one of the most important issues in this city. So I'm kind of expected to do broader stuff and, like, talk to activists in neighborhoods, like specific neighborhoods, Montevilla, Lentz, Brentwood, Darlington. And now we're looking at St. John's lately.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's got the stories and it's such an important issue, I'm going to support him in his work, because there's not a lot of places for independent journalists to, like, get editing and also, you know, get paid for their work, because
mm-hmm.
I make sure that we pay our reporters.
So, and Corey is going to be calling in and joining the conversation a little bit later, yeah?
That's what I hear.
And so talk about what is the format of Village News? Where do you find Village News?
Village Portland. VillagePortland.com.
Okay.
It's web-based. We have a couple sites in specific neighborhoods, because that was kind of the vision, and that's still the vision, is to look at individual neighborhoods, because stuff happens in neighborhoods that doesn't matter to the whole city. So let's get people looking at that. And Montevilla, you know, rich targets. You know, there's lots of stuff to be talked about there. But St. John's, there's been two or three people who've died on the streets in St. John's in the past, and you guys know, because you guys are up on that. But a lot of people don't. And, you know, it's something as simple as an obituary for somebody who's, you know, lived a life and died under the not greatest of terms, but... Yeah, and then the board up in St. John's is doing the same thing that Montevilla did. But they had a bit of a, what's the best term, a turnover, but it was more of like the developer side, the sort of,
mm-hmm.
sort of, they don't want that, there's a village moving in, and they didn't want that. So they basically got organized and took a bunch of seats, and now the neighbors who are kind of opposed to that position are having to kind of, like, push back on some of their stuff, and yeah, it's been interesting.
Well, and I do think that that's interesting overall, because one of the things that people talk about, and, you know, even the City Club has been talking about our system of city council and mm-hmm. how our representatives are selected, and looking at the fact that that might not be the best way, that it's not representative, and looking at maybe sort of neighborhood reps going to city council instead and expanding that model.
Yeah, like districts. Mm-hmm. I think... I don't know anybody who's really pushing back on the district model. It's just, how does it get done? You know, how do we get to districts? Because right now the neighborhood associations are the best way we have to look at like super local issues.
Well, but, yeah. Not to go too far on a tangent, but that's something we had talked about a bit during that era of the neighborhood association. We had really explored some of the options, and there's not a whole lot stopping neighborhood associations from having more to do. The city is the one who's like, oh, well, you know, just you can't even handle this. And it's like, yeah, because there's no equity. Like, you don't pay anybody to do this. It's a full-time job a lot of times. It's a job people ought to do. It gets you all this information at the local level. Like,
right.
But the system's already in place.
Yeah.
And if we were to want to push it that direction, that's something that you know seems interesting to us at any rate.
It's a skeleton of real popular power already.
It is, yeah.
I just want to mention the man who was recently killed in North Portland, Ricky Malone. I just want to say his name.
Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's the thing. Right now, neighborhood associations. That's the big thing. Is like your daily plan is like, let's share the power. Mm-hmm. What power do they have? You know, there's really not that. That's where the conversation should start, is like, where is, how much power
do they
have?
You're going to have to go get some power first.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they're kind of fighting over these titles, mm-hmm. and this sort of like, it's almost ceremonial power. Mm-hmm. But they could have more power, and they probably should have official power to block stuff at City Hall.
You have a decent amount of media power.
Yeah, but, that's true.
But just a comment on Udaly's plan, because that thing does kind of bother me, having gone through all that and having done it and really cared and enjoyed that populist aspect of it. What they're looking to do is consolidate power, really, because mm-hmm. the people who would receive those funds that they're fighting over, which is really like a $1,300 a month media budget, everyone.
Right, right. Thank you.
Yeah, really. that it's not a whole lot of money at all, but they're going to select those people as the city council. So there's no more walk up to your neighborhood, appeal to the thing. It's like selected by those groups, as you know, all the groups they already like, all the NGOs they already work with, mm-hmm. probably.
Let's talk about that $1,300 media budget, though, and what they can do with that. Because some of what they can do with that is influence things like the Wapato discussion.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very slick video that went out a little while ago, mm-hmm. That was probably funded by that money. That talked a lot about the benefits of Wapato and the natural sunlight and all that sort of thing. And how,
who put out the video?
Well, it's sort of questionable. It went out to a lot of different web pages and entities, and was kind of from an anonymous email address. But it has all the earmarks of previous actions by Montevilla Initiative associated folks. So my assumption is that, but I don't know for
and
sure.
People probably don't know what the Montevilla Initiative is.
Montevilla Initiative was a group of neighborhood vigilantes, I'm just going to say it, that came out of that Montevilla Neighborhood Association action. So basically, after the Montevilla Neighborhood Association voted to say that they did not want sweeps in their neighborhood, another group was formed to say stridently that yes, they did. And they have kind of gone from there. They've been involved in harassing houseless neighbors. They were implicated in harassing the Multnomah County Needle Exchange Program.
Yeah.
There was a beautiful article in the LA Times about it, if you ever want to look it up.
Yeah.
LA Times, Montevilla Initiative, Google it. But so
it takes the LA Times to,
yeah, to quiet them.
So they
have been since then continually pushing for Wapato. They co-hosted a forum on it with the police union.
Yeah.
About a year ago.
That was actually when we had come on to talk about Daryl Turner saying that the cops had basically shown up because Columbia said so. This is the group who set up that event. Yeah.
Who would you be able to give a description of, like, who these people are that are so interested in Wapato? Do you think they are mostly Montevilla based, or is it a bigger, do you know?
Well, I would say it's probably a conglomeration of those folks, other sort of neighborhood activists. I would imagine that there are folks from the Overlook neighborhood who are involved in pushing that. We just happen to be the most familiar with the people from Montevilla. But I also know that there are developers that are very interested in seeing that happen. And clearly, recently, the Trump administration has signaled that that's the direction that they want to go. So there was just a City Lab article that came out yesterday. Take a look at it. It kind of outlines what the Trump administration is saying that they want to do. And most of this, most of their plans focus on incarceration, focus on increased policing. So all of the things that we have been in neighborhoods talking about not wanting, that you know, we've been hearing from people in neighborhoods that they don't want more police doing this, that we, you know, need to find other options, that, you know, we see the dangers of sending police to deal with situations that they're not trained or equipped for, that, you know, that's how, you know, there was a police shooting last week of a man named Coben Henriksen who was killed, and he sounds like he was in mental health crisis, and that police were not the people who should have been responding to that, and yet they were dispatched and they killed him. So we are pushing back against that type of situation, but that does not seem to be what the federal government at this point wants. They are definitely pushing towards more punitive measures. And it also seems interesting because that lines up, the states that they are targeting line up with, say, sanctuary states, line up with states that have been pushing back against other Trump administration regulations.
Like California, it seems, like, to be his main nemesis.
California,
that he's focusing on.
And also Oregon. Yeah. So, you know, now Ben Carson and HUD have signaled interest in the Wapato project. Mm-hmm. They have sent people out to participate in a tour more recently, which Andrew's going to tell us a little bit about. But they're also signaling pretty heavily that this is something that they want to invest in, and that pushing towards more carceral modes of dealing with houselessness is where they're going to be going. So we feel like it's really important to be on the lookout for that. So so I kind of want to hear from Andrew about that tour.
Right. I just wanted to see the space. I've heard so much about it. And
this was Monday, December 2nd.
You looked it up. Okay, that does sound great. Yeah, I just wanted to see the space. And you talk about, or you're wondering, like, who actually was on the tour. And a lot of neighbors, a lot of kind of older folk, a couple, plenty of blue hairs and a couple blue-haired activists. But it was mainly neighbors who just, they seemed unsatisfied with the current situation. I think they see people in the streets and they feel like the current system isn't working. And they see snitcher being outside the main realm of, you know, the people who handle, who deal with homelessness is another option. And yeah, and I think that's, I think they just want other answers. And there's at least, you know, snitcher's idea is another answer, but it's just a space. Like they could do a lot of things with that space, but it feels more like a high school than a jail to me, really. But, there are cells, and that's one thing that they've been kind of misrepresenting. There are a few cells in there. But yeah, we basically, the lady who I, they broke it up into little groups. So the lady who showed us around was from the real estate company. So it very much felt like a real estate tour, like, hey, there's a lot of natural light here, and this is gonna be fun space. And,
oh, wow.
You know, we can put a mural here. And she was lovely. She was nice. But
I just want to mention that Andrew mentioned to me before the space that the woman was referring to as fun space was actually the room where all of the cameras and video monitors were kept for the building. So for these people, the center of the Panopticon is fun space.
Yeah. Aren't you having fun?
Let me just remind people that they're listening to Wednesday Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. I am the overall regular host of Wednesday Talk Radio, Paul Roland, and this is the third Wednesday with the folks from Portland Assembly. We've got Sarah and Jonathan here, and we've got Andrew Wilkins from villageportland.com, which is a local web news site that covers a lot of these issues. And we're going to have his co-worker, Corey Elia, calling in just a few minutes. And we're talking about Wapato in the tour that you recently took of Wapato, which in the news accounts was largely billed as this HUD, you know, that well, first it seemed like Ben Carson himself was coming to right. visit Portland. I guess it was his regional administrator who showed up on one of a series of tours on that day. But I guess there is still some confusion, at least in my mind, about what the nature of that whole thing was?
It was just, I mean, there's been tours before, and it was just, they opened the doors. I'm pretty sure it was the Hayden Island Neighborhood Association who...
Which is where Wapato is.
Yeah, who organized the tour. And I think Schnitzer just wants to get more people out there and keep his name in the press and keep this project in the press. Because it's like, first it was Volunteers of America, and then it was Helping Hands that he's trying to bring in. So he's trying to partner with these different groups to make some stuff happen. But Helping Hands, it's like, they have like 200 beds in 11 different facilities, mostly on the coast. So definitely small scale. It'd be hard for me to see them being able to scale up to
so how many people, how many like inmates was, you know, jail inmates was it designed for originally? Do you know?
950 beds.
Okay.
Beds.
Which to me, having worked in shelters and kind of tried to organize new shelters, that sounds like a lot of people, and it does not sound like it. It sounds like it would be very difficult to run that in a manner that felt like a hotel and not a jail to me.
And not to mention that, especially by way of the model, because the things that really ring poorly with me, because I understand where a lot of people are coming from. They think that, Schnitzer is a neutral party, and he's some business guy. He doesn't have to care. It's similar to what they tell me about Trump sometimes, actually, where it's like, oh, he doesn't even have to be president. He's already rich, man. He doesn't
right.
even...
Yeah, I've heard that line.
Yeah, right? It's really silly, because what they're actually doing is making money off of this somehow. And so this dude is not only like writing off taxes on this depreciating building as much as he wants, he's looking to get money to run it from city programs, right? So that is absolutely the root issue for me. If they actually wanted to do this as an act of public good, it is a great building. It's huge. Give it to somebody. Give it to a land trust for indigenous people, and let the local services that aren't from the coast, that are your buddies or whatever, right? Like that you're importing again, because there's always this kind of condensation of the rich people's friends in these NGO models, right?
Well, it has to become part of the economy.
Yeah.
It can't just be a place for people to live.
Yeah, we got to make money somehow is really the problem here. And so that's the weird economic appeal I feel coming out of that, that they're like, well, let's monetize it somehow. These are unproductive members of a society. And it's like, that is the first problem we have here.
Yeah.
We're crushing people with this productivity thing. It's not rational or real. Like, we're at a point where we need to talk about that too. Sorry.
So this is a call-in show. 503-231-8187 is the number, 503-231-8187. And I believe we've had someone waiting for a little while. Go ahead. You are on the air.
Hey, this is Pear calling.
Good morning.
Hey, I'm wondering, now this prison was built, they say, for $60 million. If it was built on the usual method, is you float a bond measure for $60 million,
mm-hmm.
and then you wind up paying the banks back on that loan. So are we still paying off that loan, or has it been paid off, or what?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I think it's very important.
I'll look it up now.
If we had a public bank, we wouldn't be paying interest on these loans to out-of-state bankers, for one thing.
It's true, because our public bank could own our public lands.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
They could float the whole thing themselves.
So I think John's actually looking up that question right now, because I don't know that we actually know that. How was Wapato funded originally? I do think it was a levy, but I'm not sure.
I don't know if I'll be able to find it, but I'm definitely curious. If someone else knows, especially, please call in and let us know.
503-231-8187 if you have the answer to that question.
It was a bond.
Yeah,
I
feel like we paid for that.
We voted for it, and based on the fear tactics stuff, okay. I'm pretty sure.
I think that's true, because when we talked to Jackie Wang, that's something she had mentioned about being a giant national scandal, effectively, where that was just another way for us to get wiped out of money.
Well, and I want to say, so you've both said fear tactics, that fear tactics were what was used during that time period to build these jails. And I got to say, I see the same thing happening, like starting to happen right now. We see an increased demonization of houseless populations. Like most people that you talk to who are housed, who don't talk to houseless people, basically think that they are all drug addicts, mm-hmm. and mentally ill. They do not recognize the aspect of this that is the economy, that is people being forced out of their homes because their jobs do not pay enough to pay their increased rent because of the increased financialization of the housing market.
And the bitter irony that this huge increased wave that happened recently came from the housing bubble that created the crash of 2008.
Exactly. Yeah. So now we are in the process of criminalizing Amazing. This population. I've talked to a lot of outreach workers who are very concerned that the recent closure of city and state funded beds, shelter beds in Portland, for instance, the Safe Shelter, which is a downtown shelter for women, recently closed. We're losing beds all over the city and county. And I know a lot of people who feel that that is to force the Wapato issue. Because if we are losing beds and there are all these places for people to be way out there in the swamp, why aren't we using it?
And that's extra infuriating because of what our friend Meg has said repeatedly about why HUD is so active right now, because all of the lease terms for the public housing that exists that people like Donald Trump built in the 80s at their, you know, tremendous gain through these tax gaming programs and so on. Now those leases are coming up for bid, so those people are probably going to be kicked. All these SROs in San Francisco, they're getting turned over into, you know, tech dorms or whatever that used to be single residency occupancy public housing. That's exactly what is happening right now. They're all coming up on their leases and they're going to be property to buy.
So we're looking at another wave of displacement coming.
Yeah. The most poor and disenfranchised who are already on subsidy housing.
Right. Well, so what are you going to do with them except put them in jail?
Yeah.
Well, let's see if Per, are you still there?
Oh, I think he dropped.
Okay, Per's gone. It sounds like we have another caller, though.
Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. The city of Portland, since 2010 to right now, has increased in population of 100,000.
Yep.
So which means we need more facilities because we have all these extra people here. As for Wapato, well, Wapato, everyone has to remember, hasn't been paid for. We still, on our property taxes, we will. Part of that is to pay for Wapato, even though it was sold. It was a terrible thing that Caffery did by selling Wapato in the first place. And here's a facility. It's a facility already built. You use it for something else. And just the idea, you're saying, no, we're going to sell it. We want to get it out of our hair. It's the facility's worth $59 million. The facility, not including the land around it.
Uh-huh. Good point.
So you have to understand. So that's why people are kind of angry about what was going on. And history's not going to be very kind to Caffery for doing this. But right now, if you're a homeless on the street, I want to get off the street, I want to do something. Well, the Right to Dream 2 yep. is the only tent city in Portland. And we need more tent cities to take care of these people. And, I mean, there's so many solutions what we can do. I mean, another solution was start giving people tickets to warmer climates.
You know, we don't like that one.
Well,
we don't like
shipping
people away.
Don't like that or anything else, but if you're on the street, you'll die.
Well, and there are a lot of options, and like that's kind of one of our points is that if the city is not providing those options, then when people take it upon themselves to do things for their own survival, they shouldn't be punished. There's a sweeps campaign kicking off tomorrow, 2 p.m., City Hall. That is to stop the sweeps. And one of the things that we've talked about in that coalition is not making decisions for people about where they live, but merely stop telling them that stop doing things that cause harm and stop doing things that are destructive to people's lives by pushing them along when we don't have anywhere for them to go.
Yeah, exactly. We have nowhere place, but Wapato would be a start. Tent cities, certain areas will be a start. And just living on the streets, I mean, not to bring back vagrant laws and stuff like that, but these people need help, and no one's helping them. And Wapato turning to some type of facility would help, not harm. And like I said, our tax dollars will be playing for it for the next, I think it's 7 years.
I did look it up, and it was a bond that was passed in 96 Promoted by District Attorney Mike Schrunk and law enforcement as a response to Measure 11. So, yeah, absolutely. Oh, we were just ramping up our ability to incarcerate people. And it's interesting that despite the huge increase in population here in the Portland metro area, we still don't need that jail.
Yeah. Yeah, that I think is something that's worth mentioning. Is like that population increase isn't really that much compared to other places. Because I'm coming from Florida in Orlando, and like they gained a couple hundred thousand people every year. You know what I mean? And granted, it's a huge city, big, different infrastructure, blah, blah, blah. But that really isn't necessarily such of a problem. But I mean, I'll bite that Wapato is a big building that we should use. And we're 100% there. What we're saying, or at least what I'm saying, is that there is a way to do it where there's no longer this capitalist control that makes me worried that it's eventually going to become a prison again. And where you don't have an option to go there other than prison or Wapato.
Yeah, until the people who want to run it are willing to say that it will be a voluntary option, I'm not going to get behind it. Like, they are leaving themselves the ability to put people there regardless of what they want. And that I can't be comfortable with.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for calling in, Harry. We got a couple other callers. I need to let people know that coming up next at 9 on The Radio Activist, Suzanne LeGrand interviews organizers at Clark College and Portland Community College about union negotiations after faculty strikes last week. At 10 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11 it's The Food Show, keeping you on top of the news and issues surrounding the food on your plate. KBOO is an independent, non-commercial community radio station powered by our volunteers and our members. By making a donation through GiveGuide on kboo.fm/give, you're eligible for more than $4,000 of free and discounted products from your favorite Portland brands. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Thank you very much, everybody who has donated and is a supporting member of this ever so important community radio grassroots project. And we are at Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm the regular host, Paul Rowland. I've got Jonathan and Sarah from Portland Assembly. We've got Andrew Wilkins from villageportland.com, who recently visited the Wapato site, which we're talking about here this morning. And you wanted to follow up?
Those points are ones I hear often, and I absolutely understand why people at face value would take them that way. But something stuck out particularly from when we got to discuss this issue a little bit with Jackie Wang, where she had mentioned the integration of risk management as a strategy, which is an idea that comes from financials, right? And then further down, that comes from the history and legacy of compulsory work through slavery, because a lot of the initiation of the value of the U.S. dollar came from that trade. And so all the mechanics of capitalism still came from that whole measurement of performance from chattel slavery and that. And so insurance and risk and hedging your bets against that fear of the other, where your value is tied to the suppression of that those people in that order, it has this carceral continuum that she brought up that's really significant with regard to Wapato, where leaving that option open, because it's already part of the biopower of this kind of, you know, state entity that does this, the recuperation of bodies into compulsory work, until that's eliminated, that is the main problem for me, that it's the control of that land. And right now the rich guy is land banking. Like, literally he can continue gaining the value of that land in tax write-offs and other stuff that you can leverage against your assets just by sitting there. So like he's saying, oh, it's costing me so much. It's like, yeah, dude, you can write it all off.
Also, just a side note, that property that we paid $60,000 or $60 million to build is valued at $8.7 million right now. But yeah, to Jonathan's point, that's the eventuality that we have to worry about, is that day when there aren't enough people to fill the beds at Wapato and they have to keep the budget going and they have to keep pulling in money to keep the facility going, and then it becomes compulsory. And then the police, who have not at any point said that they won't take people there against their will, start doing that.
And it's against a whole backdrop, which we started to talk about the, you know, just the general authoritarian turn of Trumpism and his emerging shaping of some kind of policy towards homeless, which seems to include forms of possible involuntary warehousing of homeless, houseless people. The new head of the the interagency, I don't have the name of it right now.
Alphabet soup, man. The U.S. just loves it.
Oh, it's right here. It's right here. Among the, I wrote on our program vision, among the many bad signs as the likely authoritarian turn a Trump policy on homelessness will take is the recent hiring of Robert Marbot Jr. to head the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness. And this comes upon the firing in November of the other one who wasn't in Trump's mold. Which coordinates, this interagency council coordinates initiatives for people without housing across 19 different federal agencies. This guy's from Florida, I believe. He's a consultant, so you may know about him, who's spent the last decade advising cities on how to manage services for people living in homelessness, believes, as I say, against all available evidence, that panhandling is the gateway to vice. He's another, you know, he's another DeVos type. They're surrounded by these people who are into privatization, are into like this moral, pseudo-moral crusade to hide privatization and making money off everything.
It's absolutely like he filled his cabinet with like the peanut gallery from the McCarthy trials.
That's about right. Yeah.
So one of the things actually that's good that just happened is that there was a Supreme Court decision, Martin v. City of Boise, which says that it is illegal and unconstitutional to criminalize survival, basically. So this is something. City of Salem just passed some very aggressive sit, lie, rest laws that this may come up against. So they're probably going to have to reconsider what they just voted on, because it looks like that's going to be in contention.
Yeah, and one point with that is, but if there is enough shelter space, that's when the authorities can kind of like funnel people into shelters. And with WAPATO opening, there might be enough beds till we get to the point where, as a community, are we willing to say that you can't sleep on the street and you have to go here? That's, without making an opinion on that, that'd be a big switch in how we run things.
Well, and especially, I mean, one of the things we haven't really talked about is the location of WAPATO.
It's out there.
Yeah.
It's out there.
You were saying it feels kind of otherworldly.
It does. It's a ways out. You're in the middle of an industrial park, and I drove that day, so it was definitely a ways out there.
Well, you have to drive because there's no buses.
Right.
They've talked about putting a shuttle in, but there's no existing infrastructure out there.
Right. There's been a lot of talk about partnerships and transit and stuff, but
who else can make money off of it?
It's a lot of questions.
Real quick, transit development corridors we've covered before, they always bring this up as some solution. It's mostly Blackstone, the big mega landlord. They have most of their money in infrastructure and transit in Portland right now, just saying.
So any of that stuff that goes up around where they're going to build Max or where Max already exists, it's just Blackstone making money.
Yeah, it sounds like we got Corey on the line, and we have two callers patiently waiting. If you could just hold on. Let's introduce Corey. Is it pronounced Elia?
Corey Elia.
Elia. Oh, yeah. Hello, Corey.
What's that?
You can talk it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, are you there, Corey?
Hello.
I guess not.
Oh, maybe not. We'll wait for Corey.
Well, let's go to one of our other callers. Hello, you're on the air.
Would that be me?
Yep.
Oh, hi. My name is Arthur.
Hi, Arthur.
Hey, first of all, that place out there is a concentration camp. I just want you guys to start using that word because that's essentially what it is. You know, it's a way to socially isolate people away from the majority. Also, I think all those people you mentioned, Trump and all his buddies, maybe they should be put there. You know what I'm saying?
Good luck with that.
I think it's a fantasy. Okay, but listen, I do have one practical thing to say. I think it'd be a good idea to take old school buses and somehow force the Oregon Department of Transportation to give up all the land all across the city to help put people in those buses, because a bus is really a step up from a tent, because I used to live in a tent, and and I think a bus would be almost like a super luxury shelter for a regular tent person.
Honestly, they wouldn't even have to. There are so many people that they push around in their RVs and cars already. Yeah. Just like giving people some ODOT land to park on safely, like establishing some safe sleep sites would be such a help.
I think so, because they have a lot of property.
Mm-hmm.
And the property is located in all over the city. It's not a concentrated, inhumane place. You know, you could. There are some creative problems solved. There's no creativity in solving this issue.
No,
that's very true. Well, there's no creativity, and there's also not a lot of listening to the people affected. Because I got to say, while there are people who I've talked to who are okay with the Wapato idea, with, you know, not there not being any other options, a lot of them would much rather have, you know, free, like land that they were able to build a tiny house on, or land that they were able to just park or sleep safely on.
Please, yeah.
And you can, and also you can bring the whole climate crisis into this, because you can make those buses with solar panels, and you can have the people where the buses are, they can plant trees around their buses.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way you think.
You can solve two problems at once by having green communes that treat the people better on the street at the same time.
Not to get super hippie with it or cut you off, but I did almost tour forever on a bus that we were going to run on vegetable oil for life. So yeah, I hear you, man.
that's wonderful.
Right, I've been there too.
I'll let you guys go. Thanks for putting me on the air. I appreciate it.
All right, have a good day, Arthur.
But my response to all these things is, I mean, doesn't that become sort of a fundamental challenge to the capitalist system to start removing land from either private or public ownership?
Yes, it absolutely is a challenge to the capitalist system. We encourage all of you to challenge the capitalist system in that particular way anytime you can. Decommodify land. If you inherit property, sign it over to a tribe.
Yeah.
Seriously, put it in land trust. We don't need this system to be continued.
Well, looks like we got Corey back on the line. Are you there, Corey?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
How are you guys doing today? So I've been listening to everything you guys have been saying. I myself do a lot of reporting. I'm right now working with Andrew at Village Portland.
Yeah, Andrew, say hey. What's up?
Did you hear us talking about you?
I've been talking to a lot of people about how they feel about Wapato right now and what their opinion on it is. And a lot of people I'm talking about are saying it's way too far out. I've even heard some suggestions as opposed to it actually being a center, as like it and the services being centered inside the building and the housing being outside.
Mm.
It's too far from the city center. And like a lot of people have been saying when they've been calling in, is it kind of feels like a concentration camp to some of these people that are on the streets that are hearing about it as well.
Yeah, for sure. We were talking to Andrew about it a little bit before, and he said that, you know, that they were kind of, it sounded like his tour was a little bit real estate-y, and that they were kind of trying to sell it as, you know, a shiny building with good lighting, and does it being a kind of, would it feel better to you if it were a physically pleasant place to be rather than feeling like a jail?
Okay, so my insight for reporting as a journalist comes from being homeless myself from 2010 to 13. In that time, I myself was highly criminalized, and it has happened to a lot of the homeless of Portland. And for the simple fact that Wapato was built and still remains to look like a jail, it can be very highly triggering to some individuals, I feel. It would take drastic renovations for that building just to be able to be acceptable to people that are used to that kind of situation.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I talk to enough people who are traumatized just by the shelter system and unwilling to participate in that 950 beds out in the middle of nowhere seems kind of unworkable to me.
Sounds dangerous.
Yeah, and that's kind of where everybody that I've been talking to is saying also, you know, it's something like 16 acres surrounding Wapato, and it would be perfect for just one giant or a few different small villages, mm-hmm. as opposed to being inside the building, have the villages housed outside in the pods like they do in the different villages around Portland.
Honestly, if they just wanted to, you know, Schnitzer just wanted to give the land to, you know, say, Right to Dream to, or one of the groups that could get a coalition of people to run it. But, like, you know, what they're going to do is hire the same companies that have been running the same programs that people are hesitant to use here.
Exactly.
And someone had called in and mentioned the Right to Dream camp, and they had moved that from the downtown location. It was a big to-do in, what, 2015 or 16 or
2015,
so? 2015. Right around then. And they moved it, and so now they're on the industrial land over there closer to the bridge on the other side, east side, and they still run it, and it's still working, but that other spot is empty, and it's still empty.
Yeah. It is infuriating to drive past that spot and see it fenced off with someone sleeping on the sidewalk outside the fence.
Yeah, and so that just so listeners know, that spot ran for around $1,200 a month, and it was self-run and self-organized by the houseless people. And actually, just a quick plug for Village Portland, I think talking back about Wapato, there was a video, right?
Right, right before they're about to move. Well, there's a video for Wapato.
Okay,
that we walk through, like, basically me just with a camera talking to people. But also we did a video right before Right to Dream 2 moved.
Nice, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And that's all at villageportland.com.
Yeah, you can find it all there. Yeah. But yeah, you can get the walkthrough of Wapato and kind of see it for yourself. That's what I wanted to do. It's like, it's pretty raw, but you can get a sense of what's going on and who's there.
Yeah. I mean, and even still, is that a bit of a comparison? You can go see Right to Dream versus what we're looking at here.
You know, I can drop that link in. That's a good idea.
Okay.
Well, thank you for you guys' time. I got to get going.
All right,
thanks for calling in,
thanks,
Corey.
Appreciate you.
Have a good day, you guys.
Yeah, I'm in the camp of it's a huge plot of land, but it needs some logistical things to happen for it to be viable to not just be a prison. That's where I'm sitting. Just putting my feelings on that out there. Like, if we're gonna do it, give it away. You got to give away the property.
Let me ask you guys a question. How do you feel like capacity for like in treatment, in house treatment for people like drugs and alcohol is that available? I feel like that could if we're talking about the distance, that could be actually a benefit if it's a treatment place.
I mean, I suppose it could be, but there are also a lot of private entities that do that.
Okay.
And there are a lot of, you know, treatment facilities that are kind of out in various areas. I would love for us to start talking more housing first, because the treatment aspect quickly becomes a requirement.
Sure.
And it very much worries me that would become the focus of this, which is actually one of the reasons that having a group that is treatment focused run it feel right.
Helping Hands, you have to be sober or you have to want to be sober.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, you know that we favor low barrier to no barrier housing. And it is the success model, quite frankly. Across the world, we have seen that housing first is the model that works, that requirements for sobriety or behavior do not, that people would rather autonomy.
And what you're talking about is basically providing housing either low cost or maybe sliding scale, depending on what they can afford, but with all the services, you know, that we're talking about, for if they have whatever problems that they have, there's social services that surround them basically and allow them, support them, and be able to stay in the housing.
Which I think, yes, that's supportive housing. And I think that's great if people need that. And there are people that do, and there are people that want that. But there are, as I said before, there are so many people right now who are houseless merely because they cannot afford rent.
And already have a job and all they need is a place
and
to live.
And nobody asks me if I'm sober when I pay my rent every month, is all I'm going to say. So to make that a requirement for housing, which is a human right, does not seem right to me. I think we have another caller.
Oh, let's go to them, because I'll circle back, because there's something that bothers me about that moral crusade in particular that relates to what we talked about with Jackie, that super bad notion.
Oh, we got a caller. Go ahead. You are on the
air.
We
like callers.
Is Camilo?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi. You actually anticipated my question. I was going to ask a question about public housing that has the kind of services that the population requires, you know, whether it's alcoholism, whether it's drug addiction, whether it's economic in terms of retraining for occupations, or whether it's just simply a place to live for people who you know, are no longer able to do something else. So you've mentioned that that's what we need, but I guess the question about public housing is the funding. And one thing that occurs to me is that we've got such a growing real estate market that it seems to me that they are the ones who ought to subsidize the public housing.
Oh, absolutely. And they've been getting out of subsidizing public housing. There were requirements put in place years ago that affordable housing should be built along with these huge developments, and none of that was ever fulfilled. And because Ted Wheeler and Charlie Hales before him are so friendly with developers and funders, that's never enforced. That is absolutely the reason that we are in this situation. It's not because we don't have enough housing. It's because we only have high-end housing.
Right. So how can we fight that politically to put pressure on the developers to serve the public?
Well, in Berlin, they're expropriating housing. So if a company owns more than 600 units, those are able to be seized by the city government to be redistributed to people who need housing.
Using something like eminent domain, which they had used here during urban renewal in the 50s to commit all this racist destruction in the North Portland area, right? Like, that was the evisceration of North Portland.
I mean, yeah, if eminent domain can be used to level our houses to build freeways and hospitals, or to not build hospitals, then I would think that eminent domain could be utilized to take empty buildings.
Sure you would need political support for that happen. It wouldn't just happen without the community being behind it. So, I mean, we need to organize a campaign to come up with ideas that the public
Oh, I'm with
demands.
You. Okay, let's do it. Yeah,
hit us up.
All right, we got more callers, and we're almost out of time. So we got to let you go, and let's get a quick comment from one last caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. I know people from my work with my church that have died on the streets in the last year. I know five of them. Just as any population has a lot of variety in it, the houseless population does too. And I truly believe, and this is because I've asked people who are houseless, that there would be many people who would be very happy to have just any kind of roof over their heads. I also know people who are in this newest shelter that opened on Foster that are very happy to be there, that have been on the streets for 5 or 6 years. It matters what you permit in your shelter. So people in the one on Foster can have pets. They don't have to give up the cars that they have. They can park them in the parking lot. There are so many people whose lives could be so much better, even if it were a requirement to go there. And let's face it, we have so many people on the streets right now that you couldn't fit everybody that needs housing in Wapato anyway. So it's distressing to me to hear that, quote, the homeless, end quote, don't want to live in a jail. When somebody who is on your program said, it doesn't feel like a jail, it feels like a high school. So it's frustrating to have this go back and forth and up and down and hear all the concentration camp theories and all that when there are people dying on the streets.
Well, I do want to point out that the words concentration camp were actually used by two callers who were unhoused. So that is not something that we are putting out there.
Right.
That is something that is coming from the community. And as
that
you said,
one of them had been unhoused, not anymore. And, you know, people's opinions change over time as well. So
that's still their opinion now, though. That's how they're feeling now.
Well, and also, as you said, there are lots of different types of people in the homeless population.
Right.
Homeless people have lots of different opinions about this, and we're just trying to provide a time to listen to those. But I will say that any time anytime a decision that someone who has no resources makes is coercive, I don't know that we can really say that it is a choice. So, like, if you have somebody who is going to be either left out on the streets to the, you know, element, you know, at the at prey of the elements, subject to police, subject to other people who might wish them harm, and they are offered a chance at safety and shelter, I don't know that we can call that a choice. So when we put these options out here for people that are our two choices are both inhumane, I personally feel like we can offer people better choices than that.
Yeah, beyond that being reductive, my biggest frustration in organizing this has been this whole thing about church parking lots are now able to hold people. The city said you could do it. It was legalized. Literally no one has done it.
There are two churches that participate in the program.
Yeah, it's real bad. So that's my frustration personally. But we got to get going. We have 2 minutes left. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
Sorry to cut you off there, and sorry for that other caller who was trying to get on. It's always difficult to fit people in at the last minute. Any last thoughts, Andrew, about the at Wapato and the tour? We got to get out of here pretty quick. Sorry to put you on the spot like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just they're not satisfied with the status quo, and they're open to other ideas. And we've kicked around a lot of ideas.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing.
I think we all need to do something. Something's got to change.
Yeah.
But I think that it'd be nice if money weren't the deciding factor in how this goes down.
Yeah. I think it's an ethical thing. I think that's where we got to start.
Absolutely.
I 100% agree. But to bring it all the way back, it's about the land, right? Oh, we're dead. Good.
It's all about the land. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Andrew. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
Thank you.